Chapter 3 Norm Bruett woke up at 10:15 in the morning to the sound of kids fighting outside the bedroom window and country music from the radio in the kitchen. He went to the back door in his saggy shorts and undershirt, threw it open, and yelled, "You kids, shut your heads!" A moment's pause. Luke and Bobby looked around from the old and rusty dump truck they'd been arguing over. As always when he saw his kids, Norm felt dragged two ways at once. His heart ached to see them wearing hand-me-downs and Salvation Army give-outs, like the ones you saw the nigger children in East Arnett wearing. And at the same time, a horrible, shaking anger would sweep through him, making him want to stride out there and beat the living shit out of them. "Yes, Daddy," Luke said in a subdued way. He was 9. "Yes, Daddy," Bobby echoed. He was 7 going on 8. Norm stood for a moment, glaring at them, and slammed the door shut. He stood for a moment, looking indecisively at the pile of clothes he had worn yesterday. They were lying at the foot of the saggy double bed where he had dropped them. "That slutty bitch," he thought. "She didn't even hang up my duds." "Lila!" he bawled. There was no answer. He considered ripping the door open again and asking Luke where the hell she had gone. It wasn't Donated Commodities Day until next week. And if she was down at the employment office in Braintree again, she was an even bigger fool than he thought. He didn't bother to ask the kids. He felt tired, and he had a queasy, thumping headache. Felt like a hangover, but he'd only had 3 beers down at Haps the night before. That accident had been a hell of a thing. The woman and the baby dead in the car, the man Campion dying on the way to the hospital. By the time Hap had gotten back, the state patrol had come and gone, and the wrecker and the Braintree Undertaker's hack. Vic Palfrey had given the state patrols a statement for all 5 of them. The Undertaker, who was also the county coroner, refused to speculate on what might have hit them. "But it ain't cholera, and don't you go scaring people saying it is. There'll be an autopsy, and you can read about it in the paper." Miserable little pissant, Norm thought, slowly dressing himself in yesterday's clothes. His headache was turning into a real blinder. Those kids had better be quiet, or they were going to have a pair of broken arms to mouth off about. Why the hell couldn't they have school the whole year round? He considered tucking his shirt into his pants, decided the president probably wouldn't be stopping by that day, and shuffled out into the kitchen in his sock feet. The bright sunlight coming in the east windows made him squint. The cracked Philco radio over the stove sang, "But baby, you can tell me if anyone can. Baby, can you dig your man? He's a righteous man. Tell me, baby, can you dig your man?" Things had come to a pretty pass when they had to play nigger rock and roll music like that on the local country music station. Norm turned it off before it could split his head. There was a note by the radio, and he picked it up, squinting his eyes to read it. "Dear Norm, Sally Hodges says she needs somebody to sit her kids this morning and says she'll give me $1. I'll be back for lunch. There's sausage if you want it. I love you, honey. Lila." Norm put the note back and just stood there for a moment, thinking it over and trying to get the sense of it in his mind. It was goddamn hard to think past the headache. Babysitting. $1. For Ralph Hodges' wife. The 3 elements slowly gelled together in his mind. Lila had gone off to sit Sally Hodges' 3 kids to earn a lousy $1 and had stuck him with Luke and Bobby. By God, it was hard times when a man had to sit home and wipe his kids' noses so his wife could go and scratch out a lousy buck that would give them back pocket change from a gallon of gas. That was hard fucking times. Dull anger came to him, making his head ache even worse. He shuffled slowly to the Frigidaire, bought when he had been making good overtime, and opened it. Most of the shelves were empty, except for leftovers Lila had put up in refrigerator dishes. He hated those little plastic Tupperware dishes, old beans, old corn, a leftover dab of chili. Nothing a man liked to eat. Nothing in there but little Tupperware dishes and 3 little old sausages done up in handy wrap. He bent, looking in at them, the familiar helpless anger now compounded by the dull throb in his head. He didn't feel like eating anyway. He felt damn sick when he got right down to it. He went over to the stove, scratched a match on the piece of sandpaper nailed to the wall beside it, lit the front gas ring, and put on the coffee. Then he sat down and waited dully for it to boil. Just before it did, he had to scramble his snot rag out of his back pocket to catch a big wet sneeze. Coming down with a cold, he thought. Isn't that something nice on top of everything else? But it never occurred to him to think of the phlegm that had been running out of that fellow Campion's nose the night before. Hap was in the garage bay, putting a new tailpipe on Tony Leominster's Scout, and Vic Palfrey was sitting on a folding camp chair, watching him and drinking a Dr. Pepper, when the bell dinged out front. Vic squinted. "It's the State Patrol," he said. "Looks like your cousin there, Joe Bob." "Okay." Hap came out from beneath the Scout, wiping his hands on a ball of waste. On his way through the office, he sneezed heavily. He hated summer colds. They were the worst. Joe Bob, who was almost 6.5 feet tall, was standing by the back of his cruiser, filling up. Beyond him, the three pumps Campion had driven over the night before were neatly lined up like dead soldiers. "Hey, Joe Bob," Hap said, coming out. "Hap, you some bitch," Joe Bob said, putting the pump handle on automatic and stepping over the hose. "You lucky this place is still standing this morning." "Shit, Stu Redmond saw this guy coming and switched off the pumps. There was a load of sparks, though." "Still damn lucky. Listen, Hap, I come over for something besides a fill-up." "Yeah?" Joe Bob's eyes went to Vic, who was standing in the station door. "Was that old geezer here last night?" "Who, Vic? Yeah, he comes over almost every night." "Can he keep his mouth shut?" "Sure, I reckon. He's a good enough old boy." The automatic feed kicked off. Hap squeezed off another 20 cents worth, then put the nozzle back on the pump and switched it off. He walked back to Joe Bob. "So, what's the story?" "Well, let's go inside. I guess the old fella ought to hear, too. And if you get a chance, you can phone the rest of them that was here." They walked across the tarmac and into the office. "Morning to you, officer," Vic said. Joe Bob nodded. "Coffee, Joe Bob?" Hap asked. "I guess not." He looked at them heavily. "The thing is, I don't know how my superiors would like me being here at all. So when those guys come here, you don't let them know I tipped you, right?" "What guys, officer?" Vic asked. "Health department guys," Joe Bob said. Vic said, "Oh, Jesus, it was cholera. I knew it was." Hap looked from one to the other. "Joe Bob?" "I don't know nothing," Joe Bob said, sitting down in one of the plastic Woolco chairs. His bony knees came up nearly to his neck. He took a pack of Chesterfields from his blouse pocket and lit up. "Finnegan there, the coroner." "That was a smartass," Hap said fiercely. "You should have seen him strutting in here, Joe Bob, shushing people and all that." "He's a big turd in a little bowl, all right," Joe Bob agreed. "Well, he got Dr. James to look at this Campion, and the two of them called in another doctor that I don't know. Then they got on the phone to Houston, and around 3 this morning they come into that little airport outside of Braintree."
"Who did?"
"Pathologists, 3 of them. They were in there with the body until about 8 o'clock. Then they got on the phone to the plague center in Atlanta, and those guys are going to be here this afternoon. But they said in the meantime that the health department was to get out here and see all the guys that were in the station last night and the guys that drove the rescue unit to Braintree. I don't know, but it sounds to me like they want you quarantined."
"Jesus," Hap said, frightened.
"The Atlanta Plague Center's federal," Vic said. "Would they send out a plane load of federal men just for cholera?"
"Search me," Joe Bob said. "But I thought you guys had a right to know. From all I heard, you just tried to lend a hand."
"It's appreciated, Joe Bob," Hap said slowly. "What did James and this other doctor say?"
"Not much, but they looked scared. I never seen doctors look scared like that. I didn't much care for it."
A heavy silence fell. Joe Bob went to the drink machine and got a bottle of Fresca. The faint hissing sound of carbonation was audible as he popped the cap. As Joe Bob sat down again, Hap took a Kleenex from the box next to the cash register, wiped his runny nose, and folded it into the pocket of his greasy coverall.
"What have you found out about Campion?" Vic asked. "Anything?"
"We're still checking," Joe Bob said with a trace of importance. "His ID says he was from San Diego, but a lot of the stuff in his wallet was 2 and 3 years out of date. His driver's license was expired. He had a Bank America card that was issued in 1976, and that was expired, too.
He had an army card, so we're checking with them. The captain has a hunch that Campion hadn't lived in San Diego for maybe 4 years. AWOL? Vic asked. He produced a big red bandana, hawked, and spat into it. Don't know yet, Joe Bob said. But his army card said he was in until 1982, and he was in civvies, and he was with his family, and he was a fuck of a long way from California, and listen to my mouth run. Well, I'll get in touch with the others and tell them what you said anyway, Hap said. Much obliged. Joe Bob stood up. Sure, just keep my name out of it. I sure wouldn't want to lose my job. Your buddies don't need to know who tipped you, do they? No, Hap said, and Vic echoed it. As Joe Bob went to the door, Hap said a little apologetically, That's five even for gas, Joe Bob. I hate to charge you, but with things the way they are, that's okay. Joe Bob handed him a credit card. State's paying, and I got my credit slip to show why I was here. While Hap was filling out the slip, he sneezed twice. You won't watch that, Joe Bob said. Nothing any worse than a summer cold. Don't I know it, Hap said. Suddenly, from behind them, Vic said, Maybe it ain't a cold. They turned to him. Vic looked frightened. I woke up this morning sneezing and hacking away like 60, Vic said. Had a mean headache, too. It's gone back some, but I'm still full of snot. Maybe we're coming down with it. What that Campion had, what he died of. Hap looked at him for a long time, and as he was about to put forward all his reasons why it couldn't be, he sneezed again. Joe Bob looked at them both gravely for a moment, and then said, You know, it might not be such a bad idea to close the station, Hap, just for the day. Hap looked at him, scared, and tried to remember what all his reasons had been. He couldn't think of a one. All he could remember was that he had also awakened with a headache and a runny nose. Well, everyone caught a cold once in a while. But before that guy Campion had shown up, he had been fine. Just fine. The three Hodges kids were 6, 4, and 18 months. The two youngest were taking naps, and the oldest was out back digging a hole. Lila Bruett was in the living room watching the doctors. She hoped Sally wouldn't return until it was all over. Ralph had bought a big color TV when times had been better in Arnett, and Lila loved to watch the afternoon stories in color. Everything was so much prettier. She drew on her cigarette and then let the smoke out in spasms as a racking cough seized her. She went into the kitchen and spat the mouthful of crap she had brought up down the drain. She had gotten up with the cough, and all day it had felt like someone was tickling the back of her throat with a feather. She went back to the living room after taking a peek out the pantry window to make sure Bert Hodges was okay. A commercial was on now, two dancing bottles of toilet bowl cleaner. Lila let her eyes drift around the room and wished her own house looked this nice. Sally's hobby was doing paint-by-the-numbers pictures of Christ, and they were all over the living room in nice frames. She especially liked the big one of the Last Supper mounted on the back of the TV. It had come with 60 different oil colors, Sally had told her, and it took almost 3 months to finish. It was a real work of art. Just as the doctors came back on, baby Cheryl started to cry, a whooping, ugly yell that was broken by bursts of coughing. Lila put out her cigarette and hurried into the bedroom. Eva, the 4-year-old, was still fast asleep, but Cheryl was lying on her back in her crib, and her face was going an alarming purple color. Her cries began to sound strangled. Lila, who was not afraid of the croup after seeing both of her own through bouts with it, picked her up by the heels and swatted her firmly on the back. She had no idea if Dr. Spock recommended this sort of treatment or not, because she had never read him. It worked nicely on baby Cheryl. She emitted a froggy croak and suddenly spat an amazing wad of yellow phlegm out onto the floor. Better? Lila asked. Yes, said baby Cheryl. She was almost asleep again. Lila wiped up the mess with a Kleenex. She couldn't remember ever having seen a baby cough up so much snot all at once. She sat down in front of the doctors again, frowning. She lit another cigarette, sneezed over the first puff, and then began to cough.